This episode is brought to you by RubyWhipple.com. Ruby Whipple, the website where you can find all your comic dreams come true.
All of them.
You love witches? You love LA?
Hey, do you love witches?
Do you love them? Do you not love them? Well, you better love them, because RubyWhipple.com is the solution to all your problems.
That's a bold claim. I don't know if I'm comfortable. I'm gonna file through the agency and have you guys do a make good, please.
Oops.
Very inside.
RubyWhipple.com. It's good.
G-U-D.
G-U-D. Good reading. Every Tuesday and Thursday. Get it now. Right?
Yeah.
I feel like every episode could be sponsored by RubyWhipple.
I know. We should make every episode, except for the one sponsored by HelloFresh.
Yeah, we can't do that, though. No, absolutely not. We can't. So I was reading the YouTube. Oh, welcome back to We Stayed Late.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We got an intro into the intro. We're in an attic.
We're in an attic. Welcome to the studio. Can we call this a studio? This would be a new setup. This is the new setup. We finally figured it out, and Star's not with us this week, but she will be.
She's alive.
I'm sorry. She is still alive right now, and she'll be here too.
We'll figure it out.
We're figuring that out, so don't worry about that. I think I'm okay with this camera angle.
I don't know. You tell us.
I don't know. Let me know down in the comments down below. YouTube.com/WeStayedLate.
Hey, subscribe while you're there.
We can break 1,000, everybody.
We can. Maybe one day.
Let's show those Sugar Pine boys what is what. Who stayed later? Huh? You, because you're listening to all this content. Anyways.
Wait, what were you going to say?
I don't know. What was I going to say?
You're going to say something, and then you said, oh, yeah, welcome back to We Stayed Late.
Yes, I remember. Okay, so yeah. it was the last, in the previous We Stayed Late, somebody left a comment in the YouTube page about Planetborn.
Okay.
And they were like, how do I play it? I want to play it. What do I do? And I was like, I don't know the answers to that. I will bring it up next time. And I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah,
and
so first you have to sacrifice your firstborn.
Okay. Got
then
it. Check.
Then your second born.
Okay. So
then your planet born.
Oh. I didn't know. Like, this is a question for me too. I don't know if there was like.
Yeah. So I have prototypes that we've been handing out to publishers, and so I'll be at like the conventions playing them.
Yeah.
So you'd have to come to a convention.
If it's still in development, then that's also.
Yeah. So like it's we have it shopping around to publishers right now. So it'll. I can't offer it now because it's with them, and so if one of them decides to take it, then they would be distributing it, and then you could buy it.
There you go.
And play it. But until then, it'll be an enigma. You have to come to one of the cons that I'm at.
An enigma. That's Edward Nigma.
Edward Nigma.
Where do you think that's
Enigma.
From?
I don't know. What is that?
Edward Nigma, I believe, is the name. This sounds a lot better than our other mics. Edward Nigma is the name.
Because these are actual mics.
I know. The AC is still running, and I wish there was a way to stop that, but these mics are pretty good.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're great.
Edward Nigma is the villain, the Riddler, portrayed by Jim Carrey in the movie Batman Forever.
Really? That's his name?
I think so. I'm not gonna check my phone, though. I'm going to wait for angry tweets to come at us.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that was his name. I always thought his name was the Riddler.
So I've been waiting to tell you something for weeks on end because I wanted to bring it up on the podcast. And I've been wanting to say it ever since I came in running from the metro. Remember, I came running in and I was like, we only have 20 minutes left. And then I talked about Harry Potter because I just finished Harry Potter. Well, I had something else I wanted to bring up.
But you couldn't bring it up.
But I couldn't bring it up because we're out of time. And then was here. Well, Sean, we had Sean last time.
Yeah.
And I wanted to wait for Star. But I already broke the news to Star. I just got into Hamilton.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You just did it?
I did it. So, like, I'm in my own world right now. Like, I finally listened to it because Sarah, she played it while we were cleaning up the house.
Yeah.
And because she went and saw it in Houston.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, oh, okay. So she'll play it in the background. And then I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then when I on the drive over here, it's like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just going to listen to the you know, soundtrack or whatever, the musical.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love it. It
blew your mind?
It's great. I tried to go back in a time when content wasn't as like there wasn't so much content before. Because, you know, like when you only had a few things, you would obsess over those things. So I obsessed over Hamilton. I would listen to it like all the time, all day, all night, cleaning up. And then that in Infinity War. So I I've rewatched Infinity War like a handful of times.
Wow.
And it just like when I was doing it.
Changed from when you watched it the first or second time. What do you think is changed?
I think
for
at
you?
This I think for me at this point it's just I feel just a deeper and deeper more appreciation for the movie. I just think it's there's a lot more nuances that I enjoy watching it.
Interesting.
And it does well on repeats for me all the time. And you know, I was listening to I listened to the commentary, director's commentary. I did the whole thing like I used to do, you know, but because before it's like, okay, checklist. I'm going to do this show and move on. But it's like, you know, I'm just going to try being obsessive about something for a bit and just focus
for
on
sure.
that. So, and it was really cool because the whole like, you get to see this idea of heroes are willing to do whatever it takes to win, you know, or to save the day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm willing to sacrifice. Life. I'm willing to sacrifice, you know, everything that I've done to save your life, of course, you know. But how much are you willing to sacrifice somebody else's life when they ask you to? You know, are you willing?
Oh, right.
Are you capable of sacrificing somebody else to get something? You know, whether it's the very first scene, it was Loki able to sacrifice Thor for not giving up the thing?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Vision. You know, Gamora.
Mm-hmm.
And the only person who did was Thanos. Thanos was the only one who was capable of sacrificing that person. And for, you know, his own thing. And the directors were saying how Thor and Thanos' stories were running almost perpendicularly. Like, parallel. I'm sorry. They were going parallel because if Thor won, it would have been his movie. And if Thanos won, I mean, obviously Thanos won. It's his movie.
Right.
And so they, like, completely structured everything. And that's why...
Spoilers.
So that's why they're able to like bring all the Avengers together because he was the driving force and no one was really able to establish themselves because he just kept pushing everything forward. Like once there was a moment for them to do something, they didn't have time. You just have to keep moving because the threat is just imminent and it pulls all these people up together. And so that was like the big moral question that they were throwing. Through the movie, anyway, and I just like that. I just like the tone. I like the way that they approach certain things, like, you know, they were talking about Captain America, how they would make it very shaky cam in order to just to give some sense of realism. So whenever they were at the Guardians of the Galaxy, he would shoot it shaky cam so that it would have some sort of like tangible realness to it.
Got it.
Or whenever the alien ship first arrives on Earth. Then it went back on like shoulder cam shaky as if you're there in war, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so it would give this fantastical thing that you see and ground it somehow.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I just really like I've been wrapping my mind around trying to find people who inspire me. Like the Russo brothers are really dope. Like I've listened to them talk and they seem to have a really good shoulder in their heads. And Lin-Manuel Miranda, I love what he did with Hamilton.
Yeah.
And
well, now do you hear it in Moana?
Oh my God. Yes. First I listened to Moana and then now I'm watching, listen to Hamilton. And then I went back and listened to Moana again. I was like, oh my God, this is Hamilton.
Yeah.
Straight up. And, I cannot, so I usually at the beginning, I only listen to like the first three quarters of that show.
Yeah.
Because it gets so sad.
So when we went and saw it, I cried the entire second half of the show.
Yes, dude, I cannot listen to I cried listening to
the second half of the show.
Listening to it, I was crying and like
Hurricane.
Yeah.
Kills you.
Yeah. No, but the one I pretty much always I don't listen to a lot is Burn.
That one's really tough.
That one's really tough. And just the way that they're all singing and performing.
Yeah.
It's just too intense for me. So every time Eye of the Hurricane happens, I usually skip Burn and then go maybe to like Quiet Uptown.
Yeah.
And then Quiet Upstate. And then I won't listen to the part where he gets shot.
Yeah.
Because it just gets so.
See, that's one of my favorite parts is when everything slows down.
Yeah. I know. It's so good. But it just makes. I think it's just too depressing to me. And I feel like there's the turning point when he's like. history has its eyes on you. Uh-huh. At that point, shit, like, you need to. That was the moment when shit got real, I think, for Hamilton, because then he went to war. So that lifted him up into a higher position.
Yeah.
And then that allowed him to be more ambitious. And then that ambition, you know, kind of became, there's a lot of things. Then he started having enemies.
Yeah.
And then he became obsessive. And because of that obsessive with work, he was tempted by, what's her name? Reynolds.
Yeah.
And
the Reynolds pamphlet.
The Reynolds pamphlets. And then, so yeah. And it's just.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like one of the.
And the flip that it happens with, what's her name? The two sisters. When you listen to Satisfied, Helpless, and then Satisfied afterwards, and you have that turn.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's good. That's really good.
Yeah. The moment I heard, I'm trying to remember what the phrase is, but where he says, like, I punched him, it's a blur, sir.
Yeah, it's a blur, sir. You punched the bursar. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, God, you punched the bursar.
Damn it.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, good.
It's such so like, good. Yeah, it's.
And he's it's so able to. I love the blending of things, like the whole Aaron Bursar. Like, I was watching YouTube videos and how that Aaron Bursar song is like used in like 8 of the songs.
Yep.
Even up to the part where he's like.
Well, there's like reprises, but not reprises. They're like thematic. They're like instrumental reprises, but within other songs.
Like Wait For It. Uh-huh. It has like Aaron Bursar, like just an undertone of it. And yeah, I mean.
Have you listened to In the Heights?
No, I haven't.
So that's his first. Well, kind of his first show. Not really his first show, but like his first big show.
Yeah.
On Broadway. And I saw that when it was first out.
Uh-huh.
Well, I went to New York and I saw it. And it blew my mind. It's a very personal story. It's like almost autobiographical. It's about a guy who lives in Washington Heights, which is why it's called In the Heights. And he runs this like this little shop. And it's just like his daily life. And he's in love with this girl who went off to college and has now come back. And it's like so autobiographical. But listening to it now, to see him go from that to Hamilton is like this. You still hear
the influence.
The Lynn in it. But yeah, it's really cool. You should go listen to it only to see where Hamilton came from. Because
it's almost like the B-sides, but it's kind of like if you want extra. Yeah.
But I mean, the show itself is really, really good. It's just Hamilton's.
Hamilton. Yeah.
It's one of the most phenomenal undertakings.
In like, it's such a repeatable song, like album. Like after I'm done, and the way the album ends, not in a like a, for me, I feel like in a button way. It just kind of like, I don't know. It doesn't have this.
Well, but history doesn't.
History doesn't. I know, and it's so.
That's why it's so brilliant.
And so it makes me having to repeat the whole album again. And I just listen on repeat. And my favorite song, well, every time I listen to a song, I'm like, oh, I love this one. Oh, I love this one. Oh, I love this one. And it keeps like building and building. Nonstop is like one of my favorites because it blends the whole Act One songs into one song. And I get goosebumps every so time good. At that line, like, he will never be satisfied. Yeah. History has its eyes. Yeah. And then it goes up.
Uh-huh.
Like, ooh. Like, even it's thinking so about good. It, it's giving
well,
me.
And it's cool, too, because you feel the Les Mis influences. I don't know if you've ever seen Les Mis.
Yeah.
But, like, there it's so like, that part has so much inspiration coming from those moments in Les Mis where all of those songs are coming together.
Right.
Like, and they're positioned in just about the same place in the story.
Okay.
And so, like, if you look at the two albums side by side, you go, oh, he took Les Mis and basically, I mean, in a good way, in the way that good artists use
he seems to do that a lot
from other places to be able to, like, go, okay, this worked. What about this worked? The structure worked.
Right.
Let's take that structure and, you know.
I was listening to a podcast called Song Exploder.
Yeah, I love Song Exploder.
And he was on one of them. And
I need to listen to that. I haven't listened to it.
He talked about the song because he made a song for Puerto Rico and just to, like, raise money and things like that. I forget the name of the hurricane or the event that took out Puerto Rico, I think. Sorry. But as he was talking about it, he brought up references and things that he pulled. You know, so he definitely, like, uses things for influence and – obviously listen to Hamilton, you hear like other rap influences in it too, like Right Hand Man, I used to listen to the Blueprint 3 by Jay-Z, and there's one song. It's like that beat is straight up lifted from Onto the Next One by Jay-Z.
Yep.
Like the
There's
the,
another one. It's and I brought it up before, and Star was like, oh, yeah, you didn't realize that? That's from a song.
I think, and because, and I've always kept myself away from this Hamilton thing because I knew I would become obsessive, and I just needed to space it out. But, yeah, what was, I remember you having the conversation with her, and I was just like, I don't know what that is.
Trying to remember hip-hop references. Yeah, there's one where it was like, I'm scrolling down it right now.
Yeah, but, I mean.
It's so cool just that he's, like, melding these.
Then the tough thing now is that I've listened to it so many times that I'm afraid, not afraid to watch it because I really want to watch it, but it's going to be different because it's going to be different singers. And I've grown to like love all the subtleties in their voices.
Yeah.
And I know when I hear it, it's going to be different. Yep. And like when I watched The Dark Knight, I watched that trailer so many times that when I watched the movie, I was a little bit disappointed because I created this whole like
idea of what it was
and like the way that people would say things like in trailers that they're always sometimes they're different takes from what's actually in the movie.
Yep.
And so I was very like attached to the way that those takes were done. Like when the Joker said one line in particular.
Yeah. There are a couple movies that have been like that recently where they had stuff in the, I try not to watch trailers now. I try to watch like if I'm going to watch it, I watch the first like minute maybe and then shut off. I think we talked about this before, but then it's happened multiple times to me where I'm expecting a thing and then I don't get that thing, and that's really hard because it's like you already have these expectations set, so that's why I've just decided not to anymore.
But I hear that Lin's gonna do a show in Puerto Rico. And
Really?
The original cast is going to go to Puerto Rico.
Oh shit!
And play it. And I'm like tempted to like fly to Puerto Rico, and see the show.
That
obviously,
would be
that'd be so difficult.
Amazing.
But I think like residents get first pick. So
yeah.
You know, somebody in Puerto Rico can help me out. I would love that to get a ticket to see Hamilton. Because. Yeah, and I'm even thinking, like, maybe I'll fly to Minneapolis because that's where, like, I don't know where it is, but it's still touring around a country.
Right.
But obviously it's not going anywhere like the Lion King.
Yeah.
The Lion King's still around, so Hamilton will still be around.
Yeah.
Like, even if it'll be 3 years or 2 years, it's going to come back.
I saw it when it came here with Danny and
I know,
Kenny.
I know.
And it was really, really good. Okay, I'm trying to scroll through here. There's, like, there's apparently a lot of them.
Yeah. It's a lot of references,
reading through like
a billion of them.
I can't even like decipher these, but apparently there's a lot of, and I sort of heard these as well, but I never fully acknowledged it, but like there are a lot of references to musical theater as well, like I'm the modern major general. That's
the Jay-Z reference I was talking about. It has the
right
doom.
yeah and then him spelling out his name is like the B-I-G.
Oh, I am the A-L.
Yeah.
E-X.
Yeah.
E-R. We are meant to be a colony. I really want to one day be in a group. Maybe like, I don't know. All of us know Hamilton.
Yeah.
And us sing that song, The Story of Tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Like four of us, like, all right, guys, let's raise a glass. So, and, like, all of us are taking part in the song.
Uh-huh.
That would be,
so fun.
That'd be so,
so
fun.
So I was, this is a while ago, but it was when Hamilton was, like, huge.
Yeah.
I was walking down my street, and I think he even tweeted it out. I think.
Who, Ellen?
No.
Oh, you tweeted it.
Yeah, I tweeted it. Because there was a moment where I was walking down the street.
Uh-huh.
And a car pulled up to a red light and had its windows down and was blasting Hamilton.
Yes.
And they were singing.
Yeah.
Somebody on the other side of the street started singing. And then I started singing it too.
Yeah.
And so we're all just like, yeah, we found each other. Like, it was just like this moment.
I definitely have been like blasting the music in my car.
It's so good.
As if it's like, you know,
yeah,
a rap album or something. Yeah, you know, I need a right hand man.
It's far away. I won't be able to find it. But anyway, it was a magical moment for like, you know, the 20 seconds
moment.
We were at the red light together.
I think, and it would be dope to have. It never happened, but like a concert where we play the album, because I know at a musical, it's the musical. You could just go to the musical, right?
Yeah.
But I want a concert vibe of like standing up and everybody singing out loud.
Yeah.
Because in a musical, I don't know. I mean, were people singing in Hamilton?
No.
No one's singing.
No.
But I want there to be.
Well, I'm sure there are a couple of people, but they probably were told to shut up.
Yeah. I want to go to a concert, like a Hamilton concert,
yeah,
where everyone is jamming out to the song, you know, like one last time, you know, everybody
singing to it.
Yeah,
like, you know, it would be interesting because they do concert, they do like in concert, like they did it with Les Mis. They do in concert performances.
Okay.
A lot of it. Like they've done them for the last
Do people get to like.
I mean, Les Mis isn't really the concert venue to be like. You know, singing the songs in an excited.
Right.
It's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Like the whole
show
is pretty sad. But I could imagine a Hamilton concert would be
like My Shot. Everybody singing that song. You know, again nonstop singing that song.
Like you could just imagine the whole crowd doing that. So I think that would be a really cool thing to do. So Lynn, if you're listening,
Lin-Manuel Miranda, I'm putting it out there in the world. You know, please do a concert. And
so
have
cool.
all of us, yeah, because I just want to hear those voices again. I want to be able to sing with everybody,
yeah,
a group of people.
Be super cool.
And yeah, it'd be super, super cool. So I've been waiting to say that.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, that's
I'm like
so
going
funny.
Finding these old fandoms that
yeah.
like I've kind of like not jumped
well,
on board.
You haven't listened to a lot of musical theater, right? Or
no, because my school, we were so small and none of us could sing. And or like support a whole musical.
Right.
So we never got into musicals. It was like a strange theater where that didn't do musicals.
Huh.
And so I never got completely into musicals, and
yeah.
this made me like want to be in musicals.
Yeah.
Listening to this.
Yeah,
now,
yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, it's a very, I mean, it also has a really cool style. It doesn't feel like old Rodgers and Hammerstein. You
right.
know? Like it's not, I mean, there are nods to it, but like.
Totally.
Like they'll do the whole thing, and then at the end it'll go, bing, like it's a musical.
Yeah.
You know, like they have that hit at the end that's like, oh, this is a musical. But
uh-huh.
everything else, or where they go like, you know, they'll like say the place and the date
uh-huh.
in the music.
Oh, yeah.
You know, New York City.
New
like
York
do,
City,
and that's very musical. But
uh-huh.
then everything after that is like, nah. It's its own thing.
What about the Welcome Back, the Mr. Jefferson song?
Yeah,
when he comes, is that very musical? Like, is that like an our old musicals or? No?
It's very jazzy.
Jazzy, yeah.
So like, there are some musicals that are like that, like. Jason Robert Brown
uh-huh.
sort of has some of that going on. He's the one who wrote Last 5 Years
okay.
and 13, I think. And he's sort of a prolific.
Right.
He wrote Parade too. He's just really good, but he writes that jazzy style.
Okay.
So like Songs for a New World has some of that. But yeah, that's still very. It's still very like not like a
standard
musical.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like an old musical. The new musicals that are all coming out are, I mean, School of Rock is like all rock music,
right,
and
right.
you know, like there are some that have come out. Rent obviously
yeah.
is like amazing. I started listening to Rent again recently.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I listened to it again, but it was weird because I had Benny's song stuck. I don't know if you know Rent.
I saw the movie.
Oh, you saw the movie. Okay, so you know, yeah, that's the part that that's the one that I have stuck in my head,
uh-huh.
Is the one where Benny is, like, kicking them out of the place, and
yes.
he's like, look, you have to, like, look, you can, either you convince Maureen to cancel a protest,
uh-huh.
or, and then I give you free room and board for life so that you can
right.
do whatever things you want to do here, or you leave. Those are your options.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the song is, like, it's not even one of the good. It's, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's just not like a special one. But I had it stuck in my head for like 3 days, and I finally listened to it, and it didn't leave my head still. So now I've just been.
You didn't do, yeah, because you have to like listen to it a lot for
usually,
it to get out
of
your head.
Usually, when I listen to it, it gets out of my head. But I've been re-listening to the whole album. But I really want to do. I really want to find a way because I was telling you before.
Yes.
I really want to do the last 5 years
yeah.
set in an apartment,
uh-huh.
and I really want to find a way to do Rent. Set in an apartment, like a big
oh,
apartment.
Oh my god, that'd be.
And wait, just do the whole
would
show.
Would it be like a traveling like audience that goes from like?
So
place
I don't
to
know
place?
Yet
because
but,
they have. Yeah, it's like different. There are some different locations, right?
Yeah, so I, you know, it'd be one of those things where like if we could find a space that would support it, you'd have the main set be the living room, and
yes.
you just all sit on the couches and in chairs
uh-huh.
and like on the floor,
my God,
and bean bags or whatever, and so they're like just hanging, like we're all chilling in the apartment,
uh-huh.
and then maybe there's like a sub level or something, like a loft,
yeah.
and so up there would be Maureen's her thing that she does.
Her, like, show.
Her show that she does. And then there are some stuff where they're outside, and I don't quite know how to do that yet.
Maybe, like, if there was some sort of, like, outside, not a patio. You go there, like, you're on the third floor, and you can walk out. Oh, my God. I'm so brain dead.
You walk out, and you look down? Is that what you're saying? Like, oh, that'd be amazing.
Like, a little, like, a balcony. You have a balcony. Oh, my goodness. Parapet. Yeah.
So, I mean, you'd probably have to adapt it in some way to make it work. You'd probably have to, like, adjust some of the stuff, but that's fine. I think it'd be really cool to be in that space and, like, live with these people while their power goes
dancing,
out.
Oh, man, dancing, like, the whole dancing thing. Like, you could be dancing in between
Everybody, really and everybody's, cool. like, on the table, like, you know, at the table you're sitting at, the dining room table or whatever. Yeah.
Like, the actress kind of gets you going to, like, bang it up.
And everybody's doing
everybody starts, oh, my God, that
would be
super
cool. So I don't know how to do that yet, but that would be a cool way to, like, have that show.
We have musical ideas, concerts, last 5 years, intimate, and then we want rent, dancing all over.
I want a big apartment, like an open floor plan apartment where we could just hold that. But that sounds like something that people from Rent would try and do. So, you know, it's very fitting.
Yeah. What do you think? What do you think? $15,000 to do something like that, to rent it out, month of rehearsal?
So here's the thing. Because I've looked into it for the last 5 years.
Looked into it, quote unquote, the last 5 years. Not, you haven't been doing this research for the last 5 years.
Correct. I haven't been researching for the last 5 years. I looked into this information for the musical known as The Last 5 Years.
Italics, The Last 5 Years.
Yeah. In quotes, I don't know which one it is. But somebody correct me, grammar wise. Yeah. Do I use italics or quotes? Anyway. So I looked into it, and the nice thing is that. I could use a site like PeerSpace, which we've been using for sets.
Right.
It's basically, for those of you who don't know what PeerSpace is, it's really useful for student films or indie films. It's basically a website that is an Airbnb but for film and event things.
Yeah.
Also, a place called Gigster is really good for that too. So I've been looking on those. But basically, I just need an apartment or a house, but probably more of an – well, like a townhouse would be ideal where you don't have walls on either side, but it still feels like an apartment space. So I've been looking for that. But it's like, you know, you can rent that out for $100 an hour. And so if you rent it for 3 hours, because figure the play's 2 hours, you want 30 minutes on both sides to get in and get ready. The play's like an hour and a half. Then you could rent that out for 3 hours and then do the whole show, and that's $350 or something by the time you get done with tax and cleaning fees. And then you know, you're paying your actors like $100 a show if you're being nice to them. Just, I mean, they deserve more than that, but like if it's super indie, you're paying your actors $100 a show to come in, and then you'd need that space for a couple of rehearsals, at least like 5 or 6, so you'd rent it out for that. And you've paid for the rights to the show. So, you know, after all of that, like, you could sell tickets for $30 and break even if you sold. And it would only be, like, 12 tickets a show.
Right.
So 12 people coming to the show over, you know, what would that be, 3, 6, 9, 12 shows?
Yeah.
That's 144 tickets. You could probably sell 144 tickets total. 144 tickets a night would be hard. But if you're only holding 12 people or, like, 15 people
on
a show.
That's so intimate. Nice. Yeah.
It's so intimate, and it's, like, it wouldn't be hard. You wouldn't make money off of it necessarily, but it would be a really cool way to like have an experience.
It'd be a cool experience.
People.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I want to, you know, that's what I want to capture. I want to capture like real intimate experiences, especially the last 5 years, which is very intimate. And like, you're basically in this apartment with these two people as they're living the 5 years of their relationship together. Which, you know, that feels very voyeuristic in a way. Rent is a little less so because there's so many people and so much dancing and like it's a little more flamboyant in a sense that it's like big and loud and, you know, rock music and Last 5 Years is definitely more tempered.
Yeah. But two different flavors. The same kind of
intimate space. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be really cool just to rare on the guitar and have everybody dance and, you know.
That'd be great.
It'd be really cool. But anyway, that's a project for the future.
For the future project.
I got too many projects happening right now. Ruby Whipple just started its new chapter, so that's exciting.
That is exciting.
Ooh, hello. What do you have going on? What are you working on?
Oh, you bringing that up?
I'm bringing that up. I want to know.
Okay, so yeah, I wasn't sure when I wanted to spill the beans about it, but I guess I'll just do it now. Yeah, so I came up with this quote unquote sort of web series idea.
Uh-huh.
It involves me in it, and they're very short. It's like a 3-page script I have right now.
Uh-huh.
And I told Spencer, I was like, I'm gonna work on this. I just got to work on my budget.
Uh-huh.
And not just the budget for the show, but the budget in life.
Yes.
So, I did some things. So
I don't even know what these things are.
Okay.
Do
so, no, I don't think so. Okay. I'll tell you.
Exciting.
In fact, I might not say all the details.
That's
on the podcast,
fine.
But I might tell you later. So basically, but the big thing is like I've been going through so many budget apps on my phone. Like I've tried Mint. I've tried just everything. And nothing clicked in my mind the way that I want it to work. Like it just did. It just did, I couldn't organize. I couldn't see the way.
What was the problem? And what were you finding the apps weren't doing for you?
I think he's either like they were missing something, and it annoyed me. And I feel like I need the whole complete thing. So like what am I trying? Like setting a budget for food. Like sometimes they would have budgets just for the month and not for the week, and I would need it for the week.
Yep.
Or they wouldn't give me enough. They would give you pre-decided labels. Like you couldn't make new categories. I mean, so they would have already like pre-made categories. Like it has to fit into these categories, and mine just didn't fit that way. And I don't know. I can't remember anymore because I did it so long ago, and I felt sad because I couldn't get it to work.
Yeah.
But then like. What I end up doing is I end up doing too many projects or doing something. I'm like, okay, I'll just spend $100 here, $200 there. It's fine. It's not that much. It's, you know, I'll survive. And maybe I won't eat, a meal or two. But then I don't realize how much I'm actually spending. And then I'm like short on rent, or I'm short on like paying bills or stuff. And so I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this project, I know I need to get my shit together first off. And so I made this Excel sheet where I have all my bills laid out. I have like the bills, the food, and then other things, which is like gas and personal and fun and, hygiene or something like that. And then I'm under that. I made like 6 other sheets. And so it'd be like food. And I have all my food laid out in days and like lunch and dinner. And then every time I input a price, it goes into a formula, and then it just changes everything else. So I know exactly how much money I have left for that week, how much money I have left for the month. And for something like, let's see, pets or clothes or something like that, if I input something that goes over budget, it'll let me know right away. So I've created this whole like – system that works for me very well.
Yeah.
And I can immediately look at it. The downfall is that I don't have that cool, like easy access of just typing in the numbers. Like I have to open up a Google Sheets and then zoom in and then type it out. It's kind of annoying, but I'd rather have like full access to all that information. So I've been running this system, this little budget system of mine, for about 2 weeks now. So it's not, it's like still going, I guess, beta.
It's still going through some,
because I'm learning testing. Like I'm still learning like my spending and how I spend things and how often I spend things. Like I need to know how often am I buying litter, how often am I getting gas, how often do I need to refill on certain things, and then I forget, like, oh god, now I gotta take into account registration for my car.
Yeah,
like that's $300,
and everyone, like, it'll be a charge that doesn't happen every month. So
like how do I count? And then hopefully once I know my yearly cost, then I can be like, okay, I'm going to divide that by every month or every paycheck, which is like two weeks, every whatever. Like, so if like I'm paying $250, then divide that by 24. And then that's how I'll keep a savings for the car registration throughout that time. So I'm just like that. I'm getting more comfortable with that, with getting that off the feet. So now, I don't know. I was just thinking about it today. Like, when are you going to start doing that, Luis? Because
you were asking yourself that?
Yeah. Yesterday. And then I emailed a friend who's an animator because I want to have like a sort of like animation on top of a puppet kind of situation.
Uh-huh.
There's a Cartoon Network show that they do that. I can't think of it. But it's like an animated show where they incorporate claymation and different styles of animation and real people. So it's not entirely like that, but it's something like that because I have like a Muppet character.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. I don't know what else to say. But I'm working on something.
Cool.
And I need to do it.
Yeah, that's the hardest part, right? Is like finding the money to be able to do. Like, it takes money to make money in a sense, and so, that seems to be the. When you have something that you really want to do, it's like I always find myself being like, okay, well, I'm going to have to drop this much to be able to actually do the thing. And then that's usually the thing that keeps me from continuing to do it.
Uh-huh.
So like if we want to do that show, if we want to do the show, like, okay, that's I would have to lay down. You could make your money back by tickets, but you don't know if you're going to make it. And you also don't have you don't have those up front unless you Kickstarter pre-sale or something. Which is still really hard, because a lot of people buy them at the door or whatever. So it's like that having that budget. Like I used to have in my bank account, I used to have an account for business stuff, and it would have a certain amount of money in it that I know that I can spend on things I want to explore.
Exactly, that's what I needed.
And then I have a regular checking and a regular savings, and my secondary savings was that like. Slush fund of stuff that I could use for fun to like figure out to play to buy equipment or to rent something or to have art done for something. Since I've gotten married and our bank accounts have combined, we only have two accounts. And so I've had to figure out how I'm also it was like my money before.
Yeah.
And so now I have to figure out how I'm balancing. We haven't approached it yet because I haven't had to do it yet.
Right.
But like it's going to be interesting to approach like how do I balance the money situation now that it's not just my money.
That's so
it's not the choice that I'm making. It's the choice that we're making. And if it's something that like I want to do, but I don't know if it's going to work and we're trying to save for a house, then I have to know that I – like that risk, it's a lot higher risk now to do those things.
That's so. It's a weird subject because I try to talk about it with Sarah too. Of like, because that's the thing. You join accounts, but then also, and this we're discussing is like, I feel comfortable with you having your own set of money and me having my own set of money, so we're not risking each other's money. But I don't really know how that works because, like, I feel like you should have. 100, 300, 1,000 bucks that I'm not touching and that you could spend on stuff. And I should have the same. But then together, like I would say 90% of our money is together. And then we have the 10% that maybe like we both get to explore and do things.
See, we explored that as an option. And the reason why we chose to move away from that was because it just felt like we were – it felt like we weren't – trusting each other to be okay with each other doing things. So we're like, this is my money and I get to spend it how I want.
I guess I just feel bad, like that's the thing, it's like I feel bad risking our money to do the thing that I want to do,
but at the end of the day, like the money is there or it's not. So that's sort of the final decision that we came to is like, look, the money's going to be there or it's not going to be there. We just have to have a discussion as to whether it is worth it for me to do this or for you to do this.
Right.
Like if she wants to go do a project that is something art related, and she wants to spend money to do that, like that's she wants to do it, so she should be able to do it.
Right.
You know, and little puppy jingles. My dog's here for those who aren't watching the YouTube video. In fact, if you're not watching the YouTube video, go watch it on YouTube.
Break 1K.
I didn't want, like, I had the same hesitation where I was like, look, I want you to go spend the money if you want to go do something.
Yeah.
Like, spend the money to do it, and I want you to have money that you know you can spend. And then I sort of realized, like,
still barking. The new house. Different studio.
What's the difference?
Right. Yeah.
What's the difference? Except that she has a hard threshold of money and I have a hard threshold of money that we're allowed to spend without talking to each other. But then we're not talking to each other. So let's just communicate and figure out if it's best.
That's true.
So it's like this weird balance of like, I want autonomy, but I also for the good of like
the relationship
and for like the good of just not being like I am not a person who makes decisions for me anymore.
Yeah.
I have to be a I have to be a person that makes decisions for both of us. Not that I have to make decisions for her, but when I'm making decisions, I have to think about both of us, mm-hmm. not just me.
Totally.
And so that's sort of been a recent within the last year revelation, mm-hmm. as we've been getting ready to get married and then got married, like how I have to approach my life now.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. It's just a shift in mindset.
Yeah.
You know, where before I'd be like, okay, I have an extra $500. I'm going to go buy this thing.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to get art for this thing I'm working
on.
But now it's like, hey, this is something I really want to do. I'm going to drop $500 on it. Is that okay?
Which you should be, I guess, telling.
Anyways. Because if we're gonna do things together in our life,
right.
And we're gonna, you know, we have to make those decisions together. So that's that's sort of where I'm at, and it's been a really interesting like journey to get.
It's got
financials are not always the easiest thing to talk about with anybody because it's a, you know, it's a. It should be the easiest thing because you're like, this is just how we live.
Yeah.
But it sometimes is like one of those things where it's like, okay, financials are really hard because they are basically your source of life.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have money in this country,
you die. Yeah.
Legitimately you die. So that is something that I've had to navigate lately.
And like, we're not joking about the dying part because I feel like if I get injured somehow and I have to go to the ambulance or something, I mean, that's thousands of dollars.
Yep.
Like if I can't like, I can't take care of my health or things, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like I'm still dealing with this thing on my nose that I haven't had the money with because it's like thousands of dollars just to get the procedure done. And it's like, well, can I live without it? Do I want to do this project first? Are there other things I want to do? How bad do I need this procedure? Do I need to find other ways to make money so I can do the procedure? Like, do I need a freelance gig or some other side gig that gives me enough money where I can use that money to spend on projects?
Yeah.
And use this money to use on, like, life and preparing for my future and things like that, you know? So it's just, that's kind of been, like, where my whole head has been because you're not only allocating money, you're allocating time.
Yep.
You know, and so – like, I wake up early to get here, and it takes a long time to get here through the metro, and then, which is fine, and then I go home, and then I have a couple hours, and then,
you're done.
Rinse and repeat. Yeah, you're done. So it's, you got to be creative in taking advantage of the times you have.
Yeah.
And really, like, what do I really need to do? You know what I mean? Because I want to do everything.
Yeah.
But I'm at this point where, like, you can't.
Yeah, you can't do everything.
And it's almost like me wrestling with that concept in my head, too. It's like, I don't know. Sometimes it's a little sad to me where it's I can't explore everything that I want.
Yeah.
But it's also a reality that I have to face. And it's almost – and I have this, like, banter that's happening in my mind of, like, well, you can't do that, Luis. You need to not focus on that because I will, like, veer off. Like, if something piques my interest, you know, I'll veer off and just, like, hyper-focus on that for a while. So, like, you know, Hamilton. I was researching. I watched a Hamilton documentary, you know.
Yeah.
When maybe I could have been doing something else. But also, like, it's fine to watch a Hamilton documentary, too, you know?
I mean, you're watching a historical documentary.
I'm learning about history. So, but then also, I can become very obsessive and hyper-fixated.
Yeah, me too.
Absolutely. And then I'm like, oh, I just spent 6 hours looking up, you know, the debt that Hamilton assumed for America and the whole Louisiana Purchase and our situation with France and England during that time, which is fine. But it's also, like, I need to know how to, like, budget my time where it's like, okay, I'll spend an hour here, 20 minutes here, 30 minutes here, and like not because I get easily excited about things, you know, and so I have to like find a way to pace that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I used to fall down rabbit holes of subjects. And I used to get really mad at myself for it because I would just read about things and then I'd come out and have wasted 6 hours on reading about something that really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, I already feel stressed about the amount of time I have to do something. And now I'm spending, you know, it's a level of frustration right above scrolling down Instagram. Like, it's like at least it's productive in a I'm learning about history or this thing or, you know, what, like I'm learning about a thing way, but it still is like, yeah, you had like 25 things you could have been doing and you spent 6 hours.
Like you had things that you needed to do.
Yeah. And now you've spent, you spent time doing this thing.
Like, I could have got an oil change, but I couldn't because they closed at 5, but you just spent the last 2 hours reading something down on Reddit and going down the wiki hole. And then it's like, now it's 5:05, now I can't get my oil change because it's Friday and the only time they open up is next Monday, but I can't go because I have work. Yeah, so it's like that.
And that happened to you today?
No, but that's a common situation. And it's like, okay, now I have to wait a whole week to get this one thing done that I should have done now, but I
totally. And so I used to like be really mad at myself for that because I do it, especially in college.
Uh-huh.
Because I get really interested in the subject, even if it was my homework.
Right.
Like, I get really interested in that one subject and then have to do the rest of my homework at like midnight.
Yeah.
So, but just recently I had I had sort of a thing that atoned for those sins.
Uh-huh.
in a way, because I met a guy named Ivan Van Norman, who is a host at Geek and Sundry. He's super cool. We were just talking in the airport on the way home from Gen Con. He works like Whitney and Trisha and all those people. And we were just talking about like mechanics and stuff. We were talking about how just finding interesting game mechanics to try and things.
Right.
We were talking about Essence because I'm trying to find a different mechanic for that to experiment with if I want to do dice or if I want to do something else. And so from that conversation I had with him, I started to just think about like the things that fascinate me and how I can use some sort of mechanic to something. We're talking about Dread. I don't know if you know the RPG Dread, but it's a Jenga tower, and every time you make a decision about something, it's a horror RPG. It's a tension builder, and
you have a
build
Jenga
up
tower?
The Jenga tower, time you make a decision that about something that has a risk to it, you pull one of the blocks out.
Oh,
and then when the Jenga tower falls, then that character dies, whoever is pulling out the Jenga tower.
Wow, okay.
And so it's like a horror, you know.
That's pretty good.
Terrifying RPG. And so so I was like, that's a really cool mechanism, but I feel like it has more use than just horror. And it hasn't really had much use elsewhere. I mean, some people have ported it to do other things, but like it's really focused in that.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about, I played a couple of other games and was just like, from that conversation with him, just thinking about how I could capture the feeling that I wanted about like something that fascinated me about, whether it was history or like science, or how I could capture something like that, but using a very physical mechanic
to have something that's you get a visceral reaction.
Yeah, visceral reaction. And so, so we just got done playtesting a game that I'm working on. That's a storytelling RPG called As We Fall.
Uh-huh.
And storytelling RPGs are very different from regular, like traditional RPGs, in that they tend to be collaborative,
right?
And sometimes they're GM-less, so they don't have somebody who's running them, like Dungeons & Dragons has a dungeon master. It wouldn't have one of those. Sometimes they're dice-less, so you aren't actually using dice; you're just making choices and like. There are mechanics, but they aren't mechanics in a traditional sense.
Right.
Right. So there's one that's called The Quiet Year, which is all about building maps. And so you start out with a blank piece of paper, and each person goes around and draws something on the map that is about a civilization that you are. It's basically like a post-apocalyptic civilization. You're all living in the quiet year between the time when the civilization between the apocalypse, basically, and when things start to ramp up again and bad things happen. Or not bad things happen, but like major things happen. It's like the quiet year where you're having this introspective moment. And so you go on the table and draw stuff on the map, and then you answer questions and start projects and draw cards and all sorts of stuff. It's really cool. But I was sort of drawing inspiration from that, and all these things came flooding back to me from like the rabbit holes that I've gone down.
Uh-huh.
And one of them is I love talking about Rome, or I love like reading about Rome and how Rome went from being this great civilization to being nothing, or not nothing, but it collapsed into being not what it used to be. Or like, you know, the Egyptian pyramids were built and there was a huge civilization there, a massive sort of, you know, empire that then one day just collapsed.
Yeah.
And so that was something that's always piqued my interest. And so I started experimenting with a way to capture what it's like to watch a civilization erode. And the stuff in our modern, as I'm watching our modern day society, you know, I see things that when I'm reading about Rome also happened there, or we reading about Egypt also happened there. You know, and not necessarily in a scary way, but in like a, every civilization goes through peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
But civilizations tend to reach their peak and then collapse very quickly.
Uh-huh.
So like something might be, you know, might rise for 2,500 years or 3,000 years and then collapse within 100.
God.
And it's just the way it works. And that's the, for some reason, that's how, well, there are lots of reasons, but that's how civilization works.
Yeah.
And things just get too big to sustain and people get greedy.
That's why they need balance.
Yep. Balance powers. But even then, like, there are problems, right? Because right. then suddenly you have people that are greedy and that their main focus is money or their main focus is protecting their own ass. Right. And things start to degrade. And so I
that's why we need Thanos.
That's why we need Thanos. So I started developing this game called As We Fall, where the main mechanic of it, or one of the main mechanics of it, is that it takes place at the peak of a society. Uh-huh. So your prompt is like, you know, getting you, whether it's a medieval fantastic fantasy city or it's like steampunk or whether it's like the first city of man.
Okay.
You basically are like jumping into a city it's like a city nation. It's a right. city within, you know, surrounded by other nations, and it has become this prominent empire in the region.
Right.
And so to celebrate that prominence, they're erecting a tower in the center of town. The city, no matter what place you're in or time period you're right. in, is always called Icarus. So Icarus Icarus is the name of the city. And so you can, you know, obviously like it change the context of it changes depending on what it is, but like that is always the name.
Yeah.
And so you're always playing out the fall of Icarus.
Yeah.
And so, so
Hamilton.
During the game, you
this is bringing both of the things that we talked about, Thanos and Hamilton.
And Hamilton okay. together. I won't go through all the mechanics, but basically during the round, you're adding dice to a dice tower that you're stacking.
Oh.
And it's to represent like the monument or tower that the people are built, that the city is building in the center of town to celebrate their prominence in the region.
Yeah.
Right. They're like building this huge statue or monument or whatever you decide this thing is. They're building that to display their dominance. And so it represents time. As time goes on, this thing builds higher and higher and higher.
Yeah.
But the town, the city around it, the people and the places, like you're drawing cards and answering questions, and you're watching as the city starts to crumble and fall. And then you're playing a character with a motive. So you basically get a what's called a pillar of society. So it's like it's a representation of something that you're interested in exploring for the city. So it might be education, it might be religion, it might be agriculture, it might be energy. And then you get a motive card. And the motive card gives your character something to seek. So it's like get rich, or it's like protect the citizens, or it might be bring down Icarus, or it might be protect the leaders.
Damn. Yeah.
And so you're playing out that as the character, and you're macro RPing. So you're not like playing out scenes between each other, but during the rounds, you're going, this is a problem that I want to try and address.
Right.
And so you put a die on whatever you want to address. And then other people can put dies on that same thing to help you do that, and then you roll, and if you succeed, you don't add it to the tower. But if you fail, then those whatever die roll under a 5 or a 6 go on the tower. And so the tower builds and builds and builds, and as you're trying to address these problems, more problems keep sprouting up.
Uh-huh.
And because everybody draws a card, and every time you draw a card, you get a new problem that happens in the city, and the deck is built in stages, so it's like three different stages that you go through. So things get worse and worse, and then
can you avoid the fall or
no?
Or is the
because civilization always falls? Every single civilization
Spencer.
We've ever had has fallen in some way, and so you keep stacking the dice, right, up and up and up.
Yeah,
and the city keeps like you can address certain things, like you can try and help, you can try and do something over here,
mm-hmm.
but then two more things are going to happen over here because that's just the way.
Works. Yeah.
And so you're constantly like doing everything you can to achieve your motive. So somebody's, mm-hmm. you know, if a bunch of citizens have been arrested for speaking their mind about the leaders, which can happen, and you are a protector of the citizens, you might go try and break them out of jail.
Right.
Right? So you're going to try and address that. But there are other things on the board that are happening. And so, and you might fail at that. And if you fail at that,
you
add it to the thing.
Right.
And then at some point, the tower collapses and the entire city goes with it. And
oh
so
my
we
God.
Sit and reflect on how the city has fallen, where it was,
yeah.
what caused the tower to fall, because the tower itself actually falls in the city
right.
at that point. And so what caused that collapse and, you know, and where is your character once this whole thing kind of settles and what does the city become?
Wow.
And so it's this introspective look at the way that civilization, you know,
yeah.
can go from being amazing to being...
It feel like it flips it, it's like a commentary and it flips the dynamic of gameplay.
Yeah. Because you know
well.
You're going to lose.
Yeah.
But your goal as a player is to have the city fall. Right? Like as a player,
right.
your goal is to get to the end of the game.
Right.
Which is to
But would you think some people would be like, how long can I last?
Yes. And this, absolutely and you yeah. should. Well, actually, depending on what character you're playing.
Right.
Right? Because if we're playing the character that's like bring down Icarus.
Well then yeah.
Then you're trying to do the things that are
as quick as possible.
Right, but the player is not. So that's what's really interesting is like the character is like, okay, these people we have a foreign adversary basically that's coming in and they are trying to sabotage something. I'm going to go help them do that.
Right.
So you're not necessarily contributing to the building of the tower because the tower is just time. It's just how much time is passing. But you can contribute to that to help spawn more problems that the other players have to try and address.
Right.
Or like Get Rich. Like, for example, one of the games we played, Hannah, or in the playtest we did, Hannah played somebody who's she played the pillar artistic expression.
Okay.
So she was in charge of, like, coming up with the way that art is expressed in the society. But then she also had the motive Get Rich. So she was basically like a charlatan selling this jewelry to help
wow.
ward off the bad things that were happening in the city and gaining money from it. And then she discovered that there was like this – well, there was this a lack of meat because there had been these bad storms and
uh-huh.
the food had gone away. The animals had basically gone into like hibernation or hiding. And so she ended up trying to find – she like was like, okay, I think my character knows a place where there is – an abundance of meat, and so I'm going to try and take some people with me, or I'm going to try and go hunt those things down where I think they are and bring the meat back and sell it for three times its normal price.
Right, because she's trying to make money.
But then she was hoarding the meat because not very many people could buy it,
uh-huh.
and the meat was going bad because
oh.
then there was a card that came up that sickness was happening.
Yes.
We had to identify a place that it was stemming from and why it was happening, and so she was selling this rancid meat,
oh
and people
God.
Didn't know they were getting sick.
Yeah.
And so then everything sort of collapsed down on her when we discovered that it was – when I went to – because my whole thing was protect the citizens. So I went to investigate why people were getting
uh-huh.
Why people were getting sick, and I succeeded. And I found that it was her.
Wow.
And so then we went after her, and then she ran to the other – there was like another city that she went to like take refuge basically and brought them back. And there was like this whole sort of fall. Meanwhile, Bailey was over on the other side – joining this basically taking the leaders and like taking them away for safety because people were getting kidnapped from the city
uh-huh.
and took the leaders, put them into this cave for their safety, and then decided she was going to run the whole city. And then people didn't she rolled to do that and didn't succeed, and the people ousted her.
Oh my
and
god.
And so she had to come back in and be like, then there was, so anyway, there's like
yeah,
all
yeah.
this stuff happening where you're playing out the narrative
crazy.
of the civilization and how it, you know, how it goes south.
So like I know Planet Born's trying to find a home, but like something like that. How do you even like? Can't someone just lift it and start playing, or how does that?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I could take it to publishers that publish the other types of games that
uh-huh.
I was playing that are like that, Dialect and Quiet Year and Microscope
like,
and
like Kids on Bikes. Like anybody can pretty much play that,
yeah.
and not have to pay anything.
Yeah. So.
But there's a lot of work that goes into that.
There's a lot of work.
So
the way that you do it is that you. Well, I have the deck of cards that I've built that you have
okay.
to draw from. So that's one way. But, you know, you have to buy the deck of cards, basically, that has all the questions and pillars
right.
and motives and stuff. But the cool thing about RPGs is that it tends to be pretty – they tend to be pretty open, and they don't cost a lot to make.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I go to a publisher and try and have them take it so that they can publish it and get it wide and people will pay the $5 for the rules or pay the $15 for the deck of cards or the $25 for the deck of cards, a nice hardcover book that has all the rules.
Yeah.
Then I'll do that. If not, then you just release it online, and then you have – I also built the deck so that it's 54 cards. So you can play it with a standard deck of cards. And there's a thing called an oracle that they use for the Quiet Year as well. The oracle tells you what cards mean what things. So you just get a normal deck of cards, and you have a thing that tells you what cards are mean what, and then you just use those. So you could – and that's a cool thing is, like, I could just release that.
Yeah.
And people can play it, which I want people just to play it. But then if they want – if they like it and they want to, like, buy the official version, right, then they can. So
okay.
That would be the – that would be, like, the play with that. But, yeah, RPGs aren't – especially those kinds, the yeah. really indie ones, they tend to just be, like, hey, I want you to – I want you to feel the emotions that – I feel when I play this game.
Right.
So I'm just going to give it to you.
And, yeah.
And if you want to give me $5 so I can buy lunch,
you can give me $5.
I'll take
yeah,
it,
exactly.
But I would much rather you have the experience of, you know, what it's yeah. like to watch Civilizations Fall. So so anyway, I don't know where it's going to, I don't know if it's going to have a home yet. I'm going to pitch it around a little bit and just see if anybody's interested in it. Because it has sort of a hooky mechanic with the building of the dice, and it also has, you know, kind of a cool way of being accessible to everybody, even if, you know, even if they can't
yeah.
buy the whole deck or can't buy the official cards. And, you know, explores a topic that other people have explored, like how civilizations are, you know, the game Kingdom
right.
explores, like, how a civilization is born and how it might die and how,
yeah.
you know, what, like, what it might look like. And this is very, this is honed in specifically to just, like, this is a great civilization.
Already,
now watch
yeah.
it fall.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So that's what I'm, you know, that's part of what I'm working on right now too.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's gonna
I
be
like
fun.
It.
We're gonna try and play test it. So it's we've already done one and it was really, really well. It was like one of my favorite game experiences I've ever had.
Just oh, good. Yeah.
Watching, you know, this place that we created together crumble. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, that's
wow.
It's a journey.
Yeah, no, everything's
a journey.
I
literally made it in the last week, so.
Really?
Yeah, the whole thing. I wrote everything. I wrote all
you
the
cards.
You
were inspired because you went to Gen Con?
Yeah.
And then you were like.
And I was like, man, I need to make a thing about something I'm interested in. Oh, I'm interested in how civilizations fall because
yeah.
ours is falling right now. Let's make something that reflects
yeah.
that. Oh, we have this building thing and falling like Jenga, but it's not the same. It's the reverse of Jenga because you aren't pulling things out. You're adding things to it. And then you use dice because you can roll them. And then if you, you know, so it's like all sort of built out of this.
Yeah.
Concept of, you know, of a rabbit hole that I fell down that I felt like was never going to be useful of, like, what's Rome like? Why did it fall?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really – I like Egypt a lot. I'm going to go research Egypt or, like, you know, all the little places in Mesopotamia that used to
right.
you know, be huge and then fell. Or, you know, even, like, the Russian Empire when it used to be massive and then it sort of fell. The German Empire, you know.
Yeah.
All these places that – used to be superpowers and then had bad things happen to them, like Hitler,
yeah,
and then fell from power. And that can very well happen in this too. So,
well,
yep,
that's pretty cool, Spencer.
it's
awesome.
Interesting. It's sort of bleak, but then when you're playing it, it's really fun. It's
yeah.
not like you're not like depressed the whole time because
yeah,
you're
yeah.
like you have different motives and things. So I was like, is this gonna be too dark and sad? But it wasn't.
Yeah, that's good.
Anyway, we're an hour, so we should probably say goodbye.
Remember, we were like, we're going to do this for 30 minutes.
Nope. Never happens. Never happens. All right. You can find me at Spencer Stark.
Yes, you can find me at Louis12 on Instagram.
No more Twitter? You're off the tweets?
Oh, yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm on Twitter,
I'm going to tweet at you. Just a whole bunch.
And I don't even have my notifications. You know why? I don't have my notifications on, I think, because I get notified for dumb shit.
Yeah,
like,
it's the worst.
This person tweeted? I'm like, no, I came here. I saw a little thing. And I thought someone tweeted at me or something.
Nope.
This person did something. I don't want that news. Get it out of here.
Yeah, it's really dumb.
But this episode is brought to you by RubyWhipple.com.
RubyWhipple.com.
Every Tuesday and Thursday, get more Ruby in your life. Just whip it in there.
Whip a little more Ruby
in your life. Whip a little more Ruby in your life.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Stars and names. Murphy, say goodbye. Can Murphy bark on command?
Nope.
Whoop. Ha ha ha.